I think today will be the last time you will have in your hands the same printout, handout, that we've been handing out over these past several weeks. I have another one in mind for next Sunday, assuming your reservations let you in here by Wednesday. The reservations by Wednesday noon telling me when you, or that you expect to be here on Sunday. And next Sunday, the 20th, did you enjoy Sylvester Blue singing on Sunday night? He'll be here next Sunday morning. He had a dream he's entertained for 20 years that he would be singing as part of my ministry with me. And the dream's coming to pass, so he'll be here next Sunday. But in this handout today, as we go back to Romans 1, 21 and 22, I want you to look at one of the three pages. And I could have handed it out once and not handed it out anymore, but I assume you're taking notes. And this is handy note paper that's referencing the passage we're on. Hebrews 11, 3. By faith. You have that?
Yes, sir.
Pistai. By faith. We understand. By faith. We understand. To have been created the worlds, Ionis is the word, not cosmos, more than the cosmos, everything. They're going to keep hunting out there at the reaches of space. And they're going into other eons. The worlds. By faith, we understand to have been created the worlds by the Word, not Logos in this case, Rhema. That spoken word. And the speaker of the spoken word designated by God the Father, and as much as I can look into that eternal world with, as Paul says, the glass that we see through darkly. Hebrews 1 says Jesus was the instrument, that one who spoke, he's the eternal word. But Rhema gets even more precise. Logos is choosing out from among others by speaking. Rhema is the spoken word. It is the word with power. So now we're moving from God eternal in his mystery, who chose us out from among before the worlds were formed. The instrument of such choosing being the eternal Logos that John 1 says was in the beginning with the Word and was of the same essence as the Word, and who turned from facing the God to camp out in a tent of human flesh to make the Word incarnate and then bring to us the spoken Word, which we have in the written Word, in which the preached word, when anointed by God, and is but the vehicle of accurately bringing forth under inspiration of the Spirit this written word, the Rhema continues to go forth. Now, by faith, we understand to have been created the worlds by Rhema, by the Word of God, Theou, so as not from visible things, to seeing, to have come to be. Now, the King James translates it, I'm just reading literal out there. Basically, by faith, that word pistis, that grabs all those Old Testament words that we've been talking about and lumps them together as an action based upon belief, sustained against any contrary evidence by confidence. It is action based upon belief. Boy, you've heard this before. Sustained by confidence. And thus, as I came to town preaching, we made a mistake to limit the translation of this word, which is both a noun and a verb, pisteo in the Greek. We limited it to belief. And belief, which is also in the English language, a noun, belief, and a verb, to believe, stops at the cranium. It just involves mental assent to an idea. It's the midpoint here. But this word, pisteo, is a verb, and that which results from it, the action of pistai, faith, is action based upon the belief that is maintained as an action because of confidence in what you've committed yourself to believe. And as I've said probably 10,000 times since I've been here, you can't exist without faith by that definition. And I've said lesser number of times, if I were teaching philosophy in the Greek world, before God said, here, that word's mine now. I'm going to seize in the stream of human language, which if you believe the Bible, he confused to separate and weaken mankind who sought to challenge him. I'm going to reach into this language which ruled the world, as English now rules the world and French did a generation earlier. Greek ruled the world. Study classical history, they'll tell you the Romans conquered and moved in on the kingdom of the Greeks. But the Romans were Hellenized, and Greek culture conquered them. And though Romans ruled the world in the time of Christianity and preceding, when the Septuagint was translated into Greek from Old Testament Hebrew, the Greeks were ruling at that time, the Ptolemies, one of the generals' streams out of Alexander the Great in Egypt, was responsible for opening up the translation into Greek. But by the time Jesus came in the first century, part of the fullness of time was a time when a language ruled the world more precise than any language that I know. And God would reach into that stream and take a word, that's mine now. It may have had all kinds of meanings. It may still have all kinds of meanings. It may have all kinds of meanings in history and now and in the future. But it's my word, and this is what I mean by it. And every other use of the word is something else. Doesn't mean it's bad. Just means it's something else. Doesn't mean it's evil. Can be, but not necessarily. just means it's not what I now designate as the meaning of the word. Oh, the word may have crept through the language history for a long time, but I'm on town now, new sheriff in town. I seize it and make it mine. I can even put a definite article in front of it, and that means it is what I have designated the meaning to be. The word still exists, but whether or not they put it that way, that's a kind of logos. This is the logos. This is what I now have given the meaning. There may be a kind of pisteo, but I have seized this word and given it my meaning. So the faith is what I say it is. Everything else is a pisteo. I could use the same analogy and say everything else is a logos. But it doesn't work because that's not a use that people are familiar with. Thus, when you go through, as I used as an illustration, through an intersection acting on the belief that the drivers coming the other directions can see and know that red means stop, you act on that belief with the confidence to drive through the intersection. Probably some of you did without even looking to see if they were going to stop. You got the green light. That's not faith, that's a faith. But in the Hebrew, it puts it in the negative, going the other direction. One more illustration. There are many directions you can travel on this earth. East, west, south, northeast. This is old stuff for you, isn't it? Now, are you sorry you came? You've heard all this before. Well, I'm sure that before the day's over, you'll eat something with salt or sugar in it that you've eaten many, many times. But hopefully, it will be a part of something a little different to tempt your palate and nourish your spiritual life. North is north. Now, there's true north that has to do with an extension of the axis of the earth out to the galaxies of space, and which star it points to at a certain equinox as the earth spins and it wobbles and does all kinds of things. But I'm talking about magnetic north and what's north on your maps. It doesn't mean you're going bad because you're going east. It doesn't mean you're going bad because you're going west. Oh, it could be you're going bad because you're going west to a girlfriend you're being unfaithful to your wife with. But west or east can be or cannot be good or bad. Or going south can be very good sometimes to get away from an obstacle that keeps you from going north. And you go. Remember I asked you a few weeks ago, where were you when you went in this little triangle? What color was the bear when you saw him? White, because it can only be done in the North Pole. We're not talking at this stage about good and bad. But if the treasure or that which saves your life or that which is most valuable in this life and the life to come involves going north, everything else is on north. You understand? Maybe good or bad, but it ain't going to get you to the place. Now, what God did was come down and say, I like this word. I'm going to sum up the words I use in the Old Testament. And I'm going to make it mine And I will henceforth, and if you want to listen to me and get on my wavelength, faith henceforth means this, an action based upon belief in God and His Word, that when God says it, He has the power to say amen to what He says, and it thus will happen, and I then have the chance to say amen to His Word. In other words, action based upon having found a word from God and believing in God and His Word and His faithfulness to His Word and that He will bring it to pass, action that is based upon that belief and sustained because of confidence in God's faithfulness, that and that alone qualifies faith. Everything else, be it good or bad, is not going to north, as north in this analogy is going with God. It is our faith. You cannot understand Christianity, and you can't understand what has preceded in Romans 1, that what God is looking for is faithers, by this definition, and nothing else qualifies. Nothing else. Faith, by this definition, gets His attention and the gift of His saving grace and the gift of His enabling presence, the Spirit indwelt, and makes Christianity, true Christianity, a lifestyle from faith to faith. A testing daily, every step of your journey, can the connection be broken until you will quit acting on the belief and confidence that when God says something, He will bring it to pass as we claim it and act on it in spite of every circumstance. Well, most Christianity wants a checklist. My staff cannot understand why I always deal with them at attitude level instead of performance level or the job. I can't do anything about a messed up. I mean, if somebody runs into my car, it's a done deed. But I can deal with the attitude if it was my staff member who backed into my car and didn't look back. And I can't undo what he did. I can only turn a measure of positive fruit from the incident into seeing why he was operating under a state of mind that not only produced this accident, as a steward under God, can break his connection with God. That's what makes it so hard to be a pastor and an employer. Not any trouble being an employer. That's a simple contractual exchange. You have the talent. We're paying this much. You're trading time and talent for money. You get the money. You produce. You don't produce. You get out of the line and somebody else is there and you don't get any more money. But a pastor is like God dealing with the Israelites. You are forever trying to get them to get up, point in the right direction, not some perfunctory, yes, sir, I mean, yes, sir, I mean, when's he going to shut up so I can do the rest of my work like I drive on the highway with only 10% of my brain engaged. That's the way God deals with you. He doesn't want lazy-minded, do-nothing, bottle-sucking idiots throughout eternity. I mean, what kind of idiot is God to make the angels? How's he going to stand in with the angels? Making them footstools to people like most of you, well, I thought God gets the glory. Right! There's nothing you can do that will impress God except trust Him. And He doesn't know, neither do you, if you trust Him until He puts you in a position that sorts it out. Until He tests. Oh, I trust God. And He leads you into the wilderness to prove you, as Deuteronomy says. To see what's in your heart. That's what this Christian walk is all about. To see if God can lead you and test you, whom the Lord loveth, He traineth, Hebrews 12 says. Hebrews 12, following the history of the faithers. Paideia, to child train, is the word. He's going to train you. I told you, cheer up, saints. It's going to get worse. I've told you, the more mature the saint in Scripture, the tougher the test. I hate to think what God is going to allow to hit me in the coming year. I mean, surely He can't find anything else. His genius is exhausted. But He manages to come up with something. Out of the blue. Well, why didn't you test me on what I, you know, you can trust me on? So I could show off. Fool, I know about that one. God talking. F.B. Meyer once said, I quoted it to some of my staff people this week. Christianity is climbing a stairway. You've heard this before because I've used it many times. Is climbing a stairway of your former dead selves. We have a besetting sin. We have a weakness where we always give way. Not only does the devil come back with the law of double bleep up, God lets us be tested on that same soft spot. Hate to use such an illustration, but the pundits all agree the Lakers cannot become a perennial champion until Shaq O'Neal, with all of his talents, cures his free throw shooting, to you that follow the NBA. They bring an Australian free throw teaching specialist in, and it seems as though a miracle, he'll never be 99%, but a miracle occurred. But once again, in the Friday night game in Sacramento, they returned to what they call hack-a-shack. Just wherever he is on the floor, just hacking. Fouling. Send expendable talent from the bench with one assignment. As soon as the Lakers get the ball out, foul Shaq. That way, the probability is they get no point on that possession, or maybe one out of two, and they don't get the possibility for a two-point or a three-point basket. And in spite of him appearing to have turned the corner and conquered the problem with the Australian teacher, all he had to do was miss a few in a row, And the coach is smart enough to come back and attack at that point, the opposition coach, and hack a shack's back. The devil's as smart as Rick Adelman, or whatever his name is, the coach in Sacramento, with his funny little hair. The devil's got more foul goons than the Sacramento Kings. You think the devil's not waiting? But the devil doesn't know what God knows. Here's an area I haven't tested you yet. That's what Christianity is about. Now, what's this got to do with all this complicated science stuff I've been bearing up under listening to you when I avoided those classes when I was in school? God has made me camp out to show you God's intolerance for not acting on the knowledge you have about Him and His ways. In Paul's day when he wrote this, the primary focus is the citizens of a heathen government with a limited scientific ability, but could see the footprints of God in creation, could see the inexplicable ability of things to be as they are without some power behind it, intelligence behind it, and care. It didn't take a genius for the psalmist to declare, "Looking at the heavens, what is man that thou art mindful of him?" It didn't take a rocket scientist degree to look at the heavens on a starry night, or live a few days and see the spring come and the summer and the fall and the changing seasons and life spring forth and the bountiful provisions. It didn't take a genius to say, "The heavens declare thy glory." And with that limited knowledge, that's all God asks. That enough footprints, fingerprints, and indice of His reality is there in the creation alone. That failure to maintain an awareness of His presence, godliness, failure to stand in awe and wonder, and recognize His, even in this limited definition of it, there is an ultimate power. And worship it and stand respectful. Gets Him so angry that He turns off on them and turns them over. It also reveals in the silhouette of this verse I've been camped on, that God is just in doing this because the withdrawal and the making of their minds senseless, as that verse says, the darkening of a mind presumes a previous light. A making of a mind senseless presumes a sense that was there. And thus, God, in anger because the sense that was there, provided by Him, the Creator, the capacity to see Him, as I've said, at least as a possible option, failure to do it causes God to withdraw the capacity. Now, leap by light years to a people saturated in the gospel. He's bringing it to Rome. They've been converted under Joseph of Arimathea, the household of the British king, the Silurian king, Caradoc's house. Yet their faith is spoken of around the world, and that brings Paul there because he knows that's what God's looking for. And he comes to them to unveil the richness of what is theirs to have as they continue in faith. And understand that faith is not a parking lot. It's a freeway moving forward from faith to faith. And in the process, he's holding up this backdrop that when this gospel unfolded, the good news that God takes our faith, that's all he wants from us. He'll do the rest. That the struggles of God-oriented people were even in the wrong direction. God comes along and says, I'll do everything else. You learn to trust me. And against that backdrop, his wrath is also unfolded in the present tense, being poured out. And those that encounter the truth of God and fail to act on it, he withdraws from them the capacity. And for weeks now, I've been illustrating it with a parade of geniuses, because that's the people and their theories I've been talking about. These are Nobel Prize winners, Nobel Prize candidates, geniuses. But having been gifted by God to probe into the macro and micro aspects of his creation, they exhibit to a greater degree than the poor heathen that failed to recognize God just staring at starry skies the consequences of ruling God out of the equation and not seeing him, because the Christian alternative, we talk about the standard model in physics that you feed into a computer and come up with statistical probabilities of this kind of a universe evolving. The Christian model simplifies it and has you delve into the mysteries of what God created instead of delving into his creation and worshiping the creature instead of the creator, with a mindset that absolutely disallows God to be part of the equation. You do that? Appearing to be wise and professing to be wise, you become a moron. And I have been for several weeks denting one thing into this arena here. I am showing you, and selectively, not all scientists are like this, I'm showing you how brilliant, intelligent, highly trained men who establish a faith of their own. That faith is God doesn't exist. God ain't here. Thus, they are already in our faith. They cannot, will not accept God as a possible explanation, even an explanation behind their explanation. And in that wild, careening, off the intellectual bluff, they demonstrate themselves to be morons. And they present to a world, and that's the tunnel that Houston Smith talked about, science changes to scientism. And their theories are presented with the same authority as though it is fact that the medieval church did in opposing science. Christianity's been guilty of a lot of idiocy. Bishop Usher, he decided by reading genealogies, the earth was 4,000 4, created 4004 B.C. The contemporary of Archbishop James Usher of Armagh, this is Richard Milton's book, Shattering Myths of Darwinism. A contemporary of the Archbishop, Dr. John Lightfoot, Master of St. Catherine's College and Vice Chancellor of Cambridge University, was able to endorse this date of 4004 B.C. as the date the earth was created, and indeed refine it with astounding precision. Quote, "Man was created by the Trinity," wrote Dr. Lightfoot, "on October 23rd, 404 B.C. at 9 o'clock in the morning." As Ronald Miller has pointed out, only a Cambridge vice chancellor would have the audacity to assign the date and time of the creation to the beginning of their academic year. Now, this is as foolish as a host of things that cause scientism to run mad and fear the re-entry into the scene of religious boneheadedness that characterized so much of the closed mind history of the church. It's the church that we can blame for the burning of the great library at Alexandria in Egypt. Maybe one of the most catastrophic events in the history of mankind. People used to ask during the time when I stepped forward and we gave this network and the time for 36 hours straight to raise the final $2 million to restore the central library here in the heart of the city. At that time, we were next door on Hope Street. And I answered, churchmen have been so characterized with closing men's brains and burning books. I wanted to step forward and show that we, as a church, are not opposed to every source of truth, and to keep this vital library in the heart of the city is a necessary part of the past, present, and future of this city of the angels. Scientists are not all as I'm describing. I could stand here for the next 17 minutes, which is about all the time I got, and read you testimonies of scientists who saw in their studies God's hand ever more clearly, and their research produced a greater faith in God. It does that with me. But I am pointing out a danger, and I'm wasting these weeks, unless it settles in on you, that God reaches a tolerance point that He will no longer tolerate the failure to use what He has gifted you as a capacity to respond to His Word. Faith is a gift, and He will take it away where there is a continual, because at the root you choose self rather than bowing to the truth that requires that you break down and recognize a sovereign ruler over you. That's what these reservation issues are about. A line is drawn in the sand with the pastor where you will be accountable and be numbered as one of those that's standing in faith as a witness every Sunday. All I'm seeking to accomplish, I could teach about science on festival, is to show how brilliant men who closed the door on the possibility that God created it, thus rule out faith in God. God takes away the capacity to have faith, takes away the capacity to see, and darkens what was formerly sensible into a senseless heart, and professing to be wise have become fools. Let me show you very quickly. Willard Libby, we talked about radioactive volcanic rocks that give the earth an age of 4.6 billion years. I think we poked a few holes in that yesterday, because there's some loose player neutrons that are running around messing up the numbers. And they're moonlighting off the job. And always the key, they have a faith. It's a religion. Their faith is not in God and His Word. Their faith is in their theory. And their theory starts, the present is the key to the past. And that what is, always was, and uniformitarianism is too long a word to write. I'm in a hurry. Guarantees that things have always been going along the same way all the time. And there's a lot of time for all of this to develop. And they seize upon the oldest dating method to give a 4.6 billion year age to the earth, because then their next articles of faith, all of this must be taken in faith. Is the present the key to the past? Not if God is the Alpha and Omega. Have things always been as they are? Not according to the Bible. The Bible says, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. The earth became a waste and a desolation. Waters hovered over the face of the deep. Then there's a long period, another cataclysm strikes, and there's a flood. Doesn't matter whether it's worldwide or, people argue, is it worldwide or limited? Doesn't really matter. The one that happened between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2 is very clear. God speaking there, the whole earth was covered. Which makes a little more sense for God saying with a rainbow, He won't destroy the earth with a flood again. Well, if He only did it once, that's sort of not too impressive. But if He's had a history of doing that, whew, at least that one we don't have to look out for anymore. And you must take, believe their theory, act on it with enough confidence to reject anything that contradicts it. Boy, that's faith. That's religion. That's the way you should practice your faith. But it'll only work if your faith is right. God says, I want people treating me and my word that way. Scientism says, we got the word. And we want you treating, they just want to be God. We want you treating our word the way God telling you through His false prophets, because God doesn't exist, through these religious mind benders out here, these non-intelligent, second-rate, modern-day, three-piece suit witch doctors are telling you they have the word from God. We got the word. And we looked at radioactive dating and found out those pesky little moonlighting neutrons. You better keep your wife away from them. Or since they go both ways, you better keep your husband away from them. You awake now? Well, let's look at radiocarbon. Willard Libby discovered it. Hang on now. Radiocarbon's very funny. One of the most abundant substances in the universe, carbon. When you write with a lead pencil, you got carbon. The reason my gas that was released when I was imitating radiogenic results from uranium. Not only, and the people that have the theory, it's got to be that old, and they discover and use and date rocks with uranium decay from 236 into 206 lead, they leave out the fact that gas, helium, is released. And 99.96, if the rate of decay had gone on for 4.6 billion years, then there's 99.96 helium gas that was released at the same long time that ain't here anymore. Where'd it go? I have one theory. Politicians are holding it in. Scientism prophets are letting it out. But the reason my attempt to illustrate helium gas failed is because what I put in it was carbon dioxide. And that's heavier than air. It's all around us. Now, the amazing thing Libby discovered is that in the atmosphere, there's what's called carbon-12. That particular atom. Now, there's what's called isotopes occupying the same place on the periodic table, but a different number of neutrons. All complicated. You got these little circles, the way they used to draw them, of them, atom. And here you have the electrons. We don't know whether they're a cloud, waves, or particles. And then you have the proton. But there's also neutrons. Now, carbon-12, which is natural carbon appearing on this earth, has got 12, it's got 6 and 6 and 6. And the mass is not really weight. It's the addition of the protons and the neutrons. So that's why they call it carbon-12. 6 protons, 6 neutrons. But there's also carbon-13 and carbon-14. Now, carbon-14 is produced in the atmosphere because cosmic rays hit a nitrogen atom in 14 and hits it with high speed and produces a carbon radioactive, very unstable atom called C14. It has 2 additional neutrons. So these neutrons split off of nitrogen, hit and add to the neutrons of the normal carbon base of the atmosphere. And so you have, and it produces carbon dioxide that contains the carbon-14. This is taking too long. My Lord, got 7 minutes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Help me count. How many's there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Lord, help us. I mean, God had 10, 11, 12. God had to build all these things together. There's carbon-12 in the atmosphere. Now, this is going to be hard to do. But let's do it anyway. That's carbon-14. There's 4 there. Another one here somewhere. Yeah. Carbon-14. Now, that's a bad illustration. But if I was to build a true representative of the proportion of carbon-14 to carbon-12, And every little, let's say we can cut out a cube of the atmosphere. One carbon 14 to every trillion carbon 12. So that's why it's a bad illustration, because I got four carbon 14s to 12 carbon 12s. But I can illustrate it. This is, assume this is 1 trillionth of that. 1 trillionth carbon 14. 1 carbon 14 to a trillion carbon 12s. I can't, even this cathedral will not let me stack up a trillion books, and I don't think all of us doing it could get it done in our lifetime. So will you let me just put 12 there? And carbon 14 is 4, which is false, because that's 3 times 4 is 12. That's a third. But I'm going to make the point. Now, the atmosphere contains 1 carbon 14 for every trillion carbon 12. Okay? And we breathe it in. And carbon dioxide, it's plants. They manufacture their own food when sunlight hits it. But the amazing thing Libby discovered is that when we take it in the food chain, plants manufacturing their own food, animals eating that food, we're eating beef and mutton and vegetables, the ratio stays the same. It's fixed. So any living creature has the same ratio of carbon 12, carbon 14, because he can't distinguish as he eats and breathes and lives. He cannot distinguish. You can't distinguish. My God, now when I'm eating, which bite of this is 14 and this is 12? You can't distinguish it. It's being fed into the atmosphere by cosmic rays hitting nitrogen 14 and putting a neutron off that's hitting and producing carbon dioxide. And we get C14 and it goes into the food chain. But it's always the same. Always the same proportion. Therefore, it is assumed when you die, you've got that fixed proportion at the moment of your death. Now, radioactive dating has to do with volcanic rocks. Radiocarbon has to do with the product of living things. What you put in you, a dead leaf, what comes out of you, sewage, everything that has, I mean, some of the most priceless radiocarbon things are dung droppings. Bat caves. Everything that is organic. And when you die, you have the same ratio at the moment of death of 14 to 12 that the atmosphere has. Got that? But when you or any living thing dies, because carbon 14, unlike carbon 12, which is stable, begins to decay and become nitrogen again. Nitrogen gas. You understand me? And carbon 12, I'm dead now. Carbon 12 stays the same. But half of those four is gone in what's called a half-life. And to round figure it, that half-life, 5,700 years. Another 5,700 years, half of my carbon 14 disappears again and becomes nitrogen gas. But carbon 12 stays the same. So now, I've got 11,400 years. And they push it to the maximum. 30,000 is more practical, but they push it to a maximum of 50 to far out people, say 60,000, before the half that's left is so minuscule it's not measurable. But it disappears. Half of what's left disappears every 5,700 years. Well, now you've got to believe that, though it's evidenced pretty good. But that's not the primary principle of faith. So now they go out and figure that 50,000 years, radiocarbon has so disappeared that that's as far as we can push the dates back with radiocarbons, 50,000 years. That's why they don't start with that. They start with radioactive volcanic remainders. Remember, all these dating methods do not date the rate of decay. They date what's left when it's over. I mean, they're dating the residue, the product of whatever the time machine is. They're not dating the rate. They're dating the rate by the residue. So they start with radioactive, which we've already shown is flawed. Now, radiocarbon gives us 50,000 to 60,000 years. If you're willing to act on the belief, sustained by the confidence, that these theorists are right, that as with all the rest of this, the atmosphere has always been in a stable state through the period of life. In other words, they make a faith assumption that since, based upon the faith assumptions of radioactive dating, since the earth now is established as a fact, and I think we knocked some holes in that tunnel last Sunday, now that it's established the earth is 4.6 billion years old, then somewhere, and they estimate it takes 30,000 years for the balance of decay and input from cosmic rays and the balance of the mixture in the atmosphere to stabilize. And a 30,000 year period stabilizes the balance between 14 and 12, one trillionth to one. And since there's been many 30,000 year periods in 4.6 billion years, therefore, the atmosphere, through all the time of organic life, has had this same balance. Therefore, we are expected to take in faith that another foolproof fact of scientism has been proven. Well, I intend to find this if it kills me today. Time out or not. Time out or not. I've tried this three Sundays, and I can't seem to put a mark that will enable me to read it and add some authority to what I told you about the painting in South Africa. Why can't God help me find this? Why does he have to test me on this every Sunday? I intend to find it, and I have found it. Wonderful. Well, will you remember, in case I ever refer to this again, it's page 34. How many times have we been hung up with precious minutes on that? In one of the most recent cases of anomalous dating, rock paintings found in the South African bush in 1991 were analyzed by Oxford University's radiocarbon accelerator unit, which dated them as being around 1,200 years old. Now, this finding was significant because it meant the paintings would have been the first bushman paintings found in open country. However, publicity of the find attracted the attention of Joan Ahrens, a Cape Town resident, who recognized the paintings as being produced by her in art classes and later stolen from her garden by vandals. The significance of incidents such as this is that mistakes can only be discovered in those rare cases where chance grants us some external method of checking the dating technique. But there's something even more important about professing themselves to be wise. They become morons. Criticizing religion and offering themselves as the stewards and custodians of ultimate truth, which is found in the methods of scientism, Libby discovered something. He discovered, as a parallel with his radiocarbon dating, he discovered that the atmosphere wasn't as stable as the theory requires. But rather, instead of the ratio being exact, and remember we're talking about 1 trillionth, but the measuring scopes of modern science, instead of the nitrogen and the carbon-14 and the carbon-12 as a result of the impact of these neutrons and carbon-14 being formed, instead of it being stable, where decay and input is balanced at 1 trillionth ratio, he found that something strange was going on in the atmosphere. That carbon-14 was being increased in the atmosphere at a rate of 25% more than what would be the case to maintain stable balance. He wrote it off as these people do, because look, religious faith, God says, my faith can make me whole, I go to the table and I'm healed, and I walk out and I'm still on crutches. At some point, I'm going to defy circumstances and act in faith. This is the man at the pool of Bethesda. Well, I can't get to the pool, I'm crippled. Well, he could roll. Faith is action that defies circumstance. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. I openly tell you that's what I'm preaching about God and His Word. The scientists are lying to you and telling you they're giving you facts when they're preaching their theory with the same vim and vigor. And calling it science, which it isn't. It's theories of their muddled brain that they want me to have more faith in than my God who raised up Jesus from the dead. Now, his theory only worked if the atmosphere is stable. Because you can't measure the half-life unless it all starts at the same place. 1 trillionth, C14th, for C12, and then half of 1 trillionth. Then half again of 1 trillionth. And he discovered, well, there's an anomaly. And he wrote it down in his literature, which you don't see in the textbooks that your kids are having to study. This had to be experimental error. Subsequent experiments confirmed it until the Nobel Prize candidate, Melvin Cook, carried forth the experiments and discovered it's not 25%, it's 38%. 38%. More carbon-14 intruding into the universe. The Industrial Revolution affects it. If there ever was a flood, see, it assumes things always have been. And some who try to get around this by saying, well, we must be in another 30,000 build-up area. Baloney. If there's a period when less carbon-14, or a period on this earth with more carbon-14, the whole dating method goes out the window. Anomalous dates are like this South African painting. You only need a little piece of organic material, And it's good back to a certain point. So finally radiocarbon decided there's too many anomalous research results coming in, and we can't really count that always things have been the same. I can go to the Bible quickly. I can tell you the earth between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2 wouldn't have the same atmosphere. And when the atmosphere was formed, it certainly, there's a possibility. Pasadena scientists, remember I spent weeks on the canopy theory, the basis for most primitive religions putting heaven or ultimate eternity to the north, because if the canopy was there, like a greenhouse effect over this whole earth. And then when the creation speaks of the firmament between the waters above and the waters below, and when the flood came, if we accept that, there's not enough rain that can flood. Even a local flood of the grandeur of Noah's flood. The heavens had to burst open. And certain rays that the earth was protected from that we all know ages were not there when the canopy effect. They're still not explaining. Mammals in great catastrophe, warm-blooded animals in Siberia with freshly chewed grass in their mouth, fossilized remains, frozen remains, not fossilized, and in their stomach, tropical food. They've not explained the maps of Antarctica that now science can pierce 5 miles down and see that they had the topography accurate. That's now covered with miles of ice. But now with modern science, we can see the topography. And here's ancient seafarers' maps that had some earlier source when that area was not covered with ice. I can go into the positive side. That's not this subject. We're on the wrath of God against people that refuse to accept anything but their own theory. 38% means much more nitrogen out there. This changes completely. And when they finally begin to recognize, they then went to bristlecone pine. That unique tree that's the oldest tree in the world, 5,000 years old, here in the California and Nevada mountains. I painted one once. The bristlecone pine lives 5,000 years. And by overlapping tree rings, they pushed it back to 9,000 years, speculation on the last 4. And they then seek to confirm radiocarbon dating with tree rings. And tree rings somehow matched in the science of dendrochronology that enables them to say, a ring a year, a ring a year. Sometimes trees, we're talking 5,000 years. Sometimes trees start a ring in the spring, the frost comes, and they start another one when the frost has passed. Some trees don't have a ring at all on some years. All I'm saying is that, yes, they are useful tools. Yes, they are explorative methods into this wonderful universe that God has provided for us. No, they are not facts. They are actions of experiment and confirmation and falsifiability based upon theory. And the experimenter is acting on the belief that this theory is true with the confidence to persist in spite of and such reaching a stage of religious fervor where they won't even tell the world of a 25%, a 38% discrepancy. That's all I'm saying. This is when men who are formerly with sense become senseless. Salt in the sea. Salt in the sea. 540 million tons a year. Drain off. Well, that means salt's being added to the ocean. 540 million tons a year from Reno. This is Joly's theory in 1898. So all you got to do is figure out how much salt's in the ocean today. They've done that. Salt in the ocean is... You're going to like this. 5 times 1 with 16 zeros behind it. That's 50 quadrillion. Now there's thousands, millions, billions, trillions, quadrillions. Thousands, millions, billions, trillions, quadrillions. That's 50 with 15 more circles behind it. 50 quadrillion tons in the ocean. Therefore, we can determine the age of the ocean by simply dividing 50 quadrillion tons by 540 million tons that comes in every year. Okay? 540 million tons. Let's knock that zero off. And we knock one zero off here. So it's, divide that into that. And we know how many years. And they come up with 100 million years for the age of the ocean. That sort of boggles the mind. Because that's messing us up, because the oceans had to result from the cooling of the earth after 4.6 million years ago's formation. And that's put at about 3.8 million when the ocean started. But there's a worse assumption. You have to assume. You must take in faith that the ocean was fresh to start with. Faith. Am I boring you? And you have to assume that it's always been the same. The only way we get to salt in the sea is by this 540 million tons a year runoff. Well, we now know salt formed with magma underneath the sea. And in fact, it's now pretty apparent that there's some stable relationship between atmospheric pickup and atmospheric drop. And there's a balance of salinity. I mean, things must have always been the same, because we have to have our little theory, in spite of any evidence to the contrary, work. God had a freshwater swimming pool, if he existed. And somehow or other, this wheel started. Let me go back to radiocarbon dating, because there is, with that anomaly of 25 to 38% more carbon-14 than the balance that is today being added. The Nobel Prize nominee Cook, who proved it out to the 38%, says the atmospheric age of the Earth, based upon the loss of carbon-14 through decay, is somewhere around 10,000 years. That's why they didn't want to publish his article. Folks, hear me and why I'm working to do this. I did a PhD in other subjects. I changed majors on every degree. Started out in history with a minor in physical sciences, decided to go for political geography at Cal. They didn't offer at that time in the master's program a geology major that would prepare me for Cal, so I took a separate unit major, did summer school, went on, changed, didn't go to Cal, went to Stanford for the doctorate, started over in philosophy, did a cross-departmental humanities degree. As I look back, I'm glad God exposed me to so many different areas Got a PhD minor in geography with an oral exam, and that freed me to do a unit minor in comparative religions with Kishimoto and Spiegelberg. Required minor for the cross-departmental education, philosophy, school of education, school of religion, school of philosophy. I had to get another PhD minor in educational psychology. I dabbled in every area of knowledge and have given my life to pursuing God's Word. I, therefore, do not really enjoy all the time I'm spending to point out, as I watch, and it's hard not to weep to realize that if nothing else comes of these ministries, some of the most attentive people in the audience are these teenagers, many of whom I've sent to the museums, and they've seen the geologic column, which is, as I'll show you next Sunday, that other piece of paper, just not true. This is not my first ministry. I was going to skip this portion a few weeks ago and go right on into the third chapter of the good news of the gospel. Compelled by God to point out what happens to somebody's brain, what happens to the gift of insight. Why do we call it insight? Something in us that is more than just the sight of photons hitting the rods and cones here and reactions of sight as we see with our eyes. An insight, a gift from God that capacitizes faith, capacitizes the ability to see in all of this the finger of God. The capacity, as Romans 2 will say, God will judge you by the knowledge that you have. To have been taught, to have been positioned by God with the surplusage of light, and continue to wave it off, and not move into a state of awe before God, that these people, even in Paul's day, being condemned with their little knowledge, what God will do to you if you treat His knowledge casual. For God's wrath to be poured out on those who cannot see His hand in the creation, how much more on those that have been fed from His holy Word. The difference between general revelation and special revelation. If this is God's attitude to those that fail to pick up on His general revelation, what do you think His attitude is to a casual response to the special revelation culminating in the gift of His Son and the wide open door of grace that if you'll just trust Him, He'll take you on home to eternity? That's why I'm camping out on it. To be able to stand in amazement that men who have refused and mocked God's requirement that we trust His Word become morons asking us to reject God and trust their Word with the same exclusive, deny all evidence, and forge ahead. I'm back to R.C. Sproul. Atheism is a psychological state that wants to be God instead of bowing before God. Atheism is but a culmination of the brilliant mind of what the Bible says is the root of all sin. We have, all of us, all we like sheep, have turned astray. We've gone everyone to our own way. At every level, from the Garden of Eden to the present, the issue, my way, God's way. He gave His Son to where He will do it His way in us if we'll trust Him. He has run out of patience with this stubborn bent that drove him out of the garden, they thought. They wanted the garden without God's restrictions. They wanted the garden without God's authority. They wanted the garden without the accountability at the end of the day. They wanted the garden without having to make a reservation. I think you got it. And these geniuses illustrate what a mindset that rules God out, what morons you can become. I could not stand in front of you as a pastor and sell the geologic column as fact, radioactive dating as foolproof, and radiocarbon dating as so accurate that in spite of fires and other carbon, I can say we have dated the Shroud of Turin, and not honestly tell you the flaws that make it a theory full of holes that requires faith. And they come up with fairy tales to cover the holes in their false religion based on their own self-deified genius. As the physicist said, if I can understand it and explain it, I'm the master of it. That's what they want! Master of the garden. God is master of the garden. He's fed up and he's kicking you out and turning off the ability to even see his light if you persist. And that's the warning these passages are leaving with us. That's my message today.